Newly appointed Sunshine Tour Commissioner Thomas Aft has taken over at one of the most precarious times in sporting history. The impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on sport in general, and on golf in this case, is likely to be profound. The cost of the pandemic might not fully be known for years to come, and Aft will be the person steering South Africa's men's professional game through the turbulence. He has 2 decades of experience in the golfing industry. He started as an assistant golf professional at the Lost City course at Sun City before moving to sports marketing company Sail, where he became head of the golf division. More recently, he occupied a dual role as Deputy Sunshine Tour Commissioner while still at Sail. But on the 1st of October, he moved on a full-time basis to the Sunshine Tour. I'm Craig Ray, and it's a pleasure to welcome Commissioner Thomas Aft to the Maverick Sports Podcast. Hi, Thomas. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Craig. Absolute pleasure. What a wonderful intro. I'm glad you wrote that. That's spectacular. Thank you. It sounds great.
We didn't even talk about the fact that you played volleyball for South Africa, which is interesting. We'll get to that in a little bit later. But, you know, it really is an interesting time to take over this role. You know, sport in general, as I said there, and the whole global industry is suffering. Did you have sort of second thoughts about taking the job when it was offered to you, especially because of the timing?
Craig, this process started, sure, a couple of years ago at least. So the timing was a challenge, and we had earmarked this date a while ago already. So when it was coming, it was coming thick and fast, and it was, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? But I mean, we still got the support from our board, which has been absolutely amazing. And our executive director, Sawa Nathan, is staying on board as an advisor and ensuring that the transition is a smooth one. Especially in these times over here, you need a lot of heads that can try and navigate the troubled waters. So I've got a great support around me. But was I concerned taking over? Nervous, absolutely. I've got big, big shoes to fill with Sawa Nathan being the commissioner for such a long time. Yes. Nervous, but super excited and hopefully going to bring some positive new concepts and new ideas to the tour.
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess a lot of things are going to have to be reimagined in the post-COVID world. But let's just start at what has been your mandate? What has the board said to you? You know, Thomas, as commissioner, this is your mandate. We want you to do X, Y, and Z. Have you been given a sort of roadmap of what the board's plans are, or is it your own roadmap to make?
Yeah, it's my own roadmap to make, and I've drafted up one over here, and I've even got my little strategy next to over here, which we haven't even announced to the board yet, but I will take excerpts of it and maybe bring it up in our chat over here. Essentially, the Sunshine Tour is about giving our professional golfers opportunities to play and earn a living and compete on the highest level. As you may have seen, Craig, we recently changed our payoff line from "It Begins Here" to "Greatness Begins Here," and that is my focus all the way through everything we're doing. So it's creating opportunities for our guys to get onto the bigger stage.
And I'm jumping ahead now, but we'll come back to a few things. But that greatness begins, yeah, and get onto the bigger stage. That is, the Sunshine Tour has always, I suppose, understood its role in the global game. It's never been about saying we're going to be the PGA Tour or the European Tour. We understand that we are a place that brings African golfers through onto the world stage. And will that vision change at all in the coming years, or is it still, you know, that role to play where a guy at home can earn a good living, but guys that want to go on to bigger things can use this as a springboard?
Absolutely. So I want to go yes and no to your question. We know our place, absolutely. We'll never be able to be a PGA Tour, but with our partners, with the European Tour and the other federation tours, we've got our place. But also sometimes we want to have the limelight as well. So one of my objectives in the next 3 years, 3 to 5 year strategy section is host one big event. And by that, I mean like a WGC type event, not a WGC event. I just want to make that clear, but a big event to put us on the map so that the guys can go back and say South African golf carries its weight and adds value to the federation of the tours.
Okay, for the listeners that don't know, WGC is a World Golf Tour event. Are they the rung under the majors? There's the four majors and you've got the WGC event. So what would be a WGC type event? What would be an equivalent right now that we could use as a way of understanding?
So I want to go back and coin it potentially the Race to Dubai type final event where you've got a lot of fantastic players across the world. You've got a big prize fund. You've got local guys competing against those fantastic players. And also we've partnered with some of the other federations. So we actually had a lengthy meeting this morning around the concept, around the plan. So it's gaining a little bit of momentum. Lots to do. We're at the initial phases, the infancy element of it. So it's like the DP World type event where there's a heck of a prize fund, lots of spectators, lots of groundwork for development of golf in our country, bringing it across all the spheres from junior golf, amateur golf, ladies professional golf, men's professional golf. So it's encompassing all those elements to make South Africa stand out in the map.
We hosted the President's Cup in 2003. Would that be on the schedule at some point? I don't know how far ahead the President's Cup venues have been decided currently, but would South Africa consider a bid for a President's Cup again in the future?
The short version is we would consider it. Obviously, it comes with a very big price tag along with it, and they're on their rotation basis, and the country needs to bid for it. It's not anything just yet on our radar, especially with the situation we've just gone through now. But it's never a no, and nothing too soon on the radar.
The Sunshine Tour has had a strong association and partnership with the European Tour. Again, for listeners that aren't that familiar, although it's called the European Tour, it's played all over the world. It's in Asia, it's in Africa, you know, and obviously in Europe and the UK. Our bonds with the European Tour, at one point, I think we had 6 European Tour events in one season. That was probably the maximum. How many co-sanctioned European Tour events are there in the current calendar?
So, yeah, absolutely. The European Tour have been our friends for a very long time, and I need to thank our chairman, Mr. Rupert, for ensuring that relationship is a strong and healthy one who always guides us through any challenges we may have, and he's been absolutely amazing through the last few months in ensuring our partnership remains strong and firm. To answer your question, we'll have 3 co-sanctioned events this year, starting in a couple of weeks' time, or maybe a little bit more than a couple. The 19th of November, the Joburg Open, back on the schedule. The city of Joburg kindly hosted the SA Open for 2 years, and the mayor of the city of Joburg spoke to Sawa Nathan and kind of said, he's the mayor of the city of Joburg, so he'd like the Joburg Open back, please. So we're very blessed and very lucky to be able to give him that back. So that is back on our schedule this year. Then we're going to head up to the Alfred Dunhill Championship up at Leopard Creek. And then we're going to host the SA Open this year with Nedbank and Sun International at Sun City at the Gary Player Country Club. So we'll have 3 co-sanctioned events this year. So it's very, very exciting. And our professional golfers, from a South African perspective, are going to have 68 million rand to play for in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And obviously, they're going to be up against some good European players, those that can get through all the protocols and can travel, because, you know, we don't know. The situation's still pretty fluid. So, you know, things are starting to lock down again in France and a few places in Europe. Yeah, you don't know which players might be able to make it, might not make it to South Africa. But I suppose the fewer international players, maybe not great for the tournament, but good for South African pro golfers, because it'll open up a little bit more space for them in the draw.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. We don't want to think the negative side, but maybe that's a bit of reality. But we've got protocols in place. We're creating buyer bubbles. We've partnered with Gauteng Provincial Government as well and Department of Home Affairs for all the professional golfers. When they put their name down to come, that they can get their business visa coming into South Africa. They need to ensure that they've got their negative PCR test from wherever they're leaving coming into South Africa. We had a few hiccups along the way with some of the guys coming to from Europe down to South Africa that did the wrong type of tests. So they got to the airport and showed them the documentation. And then the lady said at the counter, no, this is not accepted in South Africa. So we completely panicked, going, oh my gosh, all our legwork has failed. And then we realized the gent did the wrong type of test, and it was an SMS result on his phone. So it wasn't quite according to the plan, but we've got a lot of protocols in place going into a buyer bubble. And to answer your question, or to elaborate on your statement rather, is that we hope a lot of the guys do come on down, because it's going to be fabulous weather that time of year. Great opportunity to earn some good money and go back and use our payoff line that greatness begins here.
I suppose crowds, spectators are going to be, if not completely blocked from entering, they're certainly limited, because level one restrictions, I think we're up to about 250 people in a gathering, and, you know, in the field of golfers and caddies takes you nearly to there already, doesn't it?
Yeah, so absolutely. So outdoors, you're allowed to have 500 people. So all our tournaments are going to be, spectators are not allowed, no spectator policy. And that's been met with great support from all of our tournaments. They fully understand the situation. We are going to have pro-ams, and there's a lot of hoops our pro-am guests need to jump through. But it's going to be, unfortunately, a no-spectator policy. But that gives a platform for us to showcase our country even more so through these times in a fantastic broadcast production.
I was going to come to that, but this is the appropriate moment to get into it. golf, I suppose, is one of the few sports that really is massively TV friendly. I mean, if you're watching golf, it's great to be on a fairway and watching, yeah, you know, say Rory McIlroy hit the ball or something, which is, if you're keen on golf, it's an amazing sight to see players of that caliber hitting a ball in real life. But if you're trying to follow a tournament, TV is the best way because they're cutting from one end of the course to the other. You know, if you're physically on a golf course, you could be 3 kilometers away from someone else on the far end of the golf course. So I suppose that sort of, at least from a TV point of view, you know, nothing changes really for golf production.
No, not really. And again, the huge plus of why we're going down this path of hosting these tournaments is to promote our country, to kickstart tourism again when those borders do open up. You've got the city of Joburg, the capital, the financial hub of our country where everything seems to happen, and no disrespect to any other cities. But also going up to Mpumalanga, you've got the Kruger National Park right against the golf course, and we show a heck of a lot of the wildlife up there. And then we come to Sun City, which is a fabulous resort. So the broadcast is going to show all of that. The broadcast reaches in excess of 300 million homes worldwide. So what a fantastic way to show the world what we've got and through our broadcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the SA Open, which is the world's second oldest open after the Open, which is the British Open. It's an amazing tournament. It's been going for over 100 years. Obviously, this year with Nedbank behind it at the Gary Player Country Club, it does fill in where the Nedbank Golf Challenge should have been. Is this a permanent switch, or is it just for this year only because there is no Nedbank Golf Challenge, which is the old Sun City Million Dollar for those that are confused?
Yeah, so this is it's a once-off, and we really need to say thank you to the team from Nedbank, Mark Brown and Turby Badenhorst, that they came to and I go and assist South African professional golf, because in our conversations with them, one of the biggest things they said, they realize golf needs support at this particular time, and they came on board to assist us. So we really need to thank them and say, we know things are difficult, but in this situation, with no Nedbank Golf Challenge, they came to the party to assist the South African Open. And you've given it all the accolades already. So it's a once-off for this year.
The Nedbank Golf Challenge, I mean, that only recently became part of the Sunshine Tour. That always had a slightly standalone elite field kind of feel. And in recent years, it's become part of the European Tour, part of the Sunshine Tour, which is, in my view anyway, Thomas, I don't know if it's shared, it's given it more legitimacy because, you know, it was a great event when it was 10 or 20 players,
yeah.
But it just feels better when it's a full field of people who have qualified to be there. It gives a guy who's number 50 odd on the money list a chance to really earn a life-changing amount of money, which he might not have got before.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a magnificent event. It's the penultimate event on the DP World and the Race to Dubai calendar. So any guys that aren't into that final event in Dubai, come to South Africa and try get into that event. So it is a much, much bigger event than what we have currently on our schedule. And it's definitely raised the profile of golf in South Africa during the December period or November period where the event was. It's a wonderful event, as you said, and long may it continue.
The payoff line of the Nedbank Golf Challenge is Africa's major. And this has become a talking point, a slow one. There's only four majors in golf.
Yeah.
And three of them are in America, the Masters, the PGA Championship, and the US Open, and then, of course, the Open Championship. With the growth of golf in Asia particularly, and we've got what we call Africa's major, do you see a time when maybe there might be a fifth major added to the calendar somewhere in Asia? I mean, majors are constructs of people. These tournaments were sort of anointed as majors at some point in their history. So I don't see it beyond the realms of possibility of adding another major, or don't you think that will happen?
The short version is, as I'm going to plead the fifth on this one again, there's nothing on the horizon. There's no discussion at that level yet to create another one. The majors are sacrosanct. They're on the pedestal. They are every boy's and girl's golfing dream to be part of it. I don't see anything anywhere on the horizon just yet to create anything new, and especially through this time. It's that old analogy, keep what you've got going great and build on it. But as you said, it ended off the last statement was maybe something may happen, but there's nothing on the horizon just yet.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting debate to be had. I know I'm a traditionalist in that sense that, yeah, those are the four majors. But we've seen the women's tour, for instance, in the US, and the majors have chopped and changed it, which I think kind of has happened too much on the ladies tour, but you know, they're sort of settling down now into a rhythm. So it's I suppose something that could happen, especially if Asia comes online, but that's a discussion for another day. South Africa has produced so many great golfers. I mean, relative to the size of of the country and the amount of players compared to much bigger countries. Why have we been so successful? And it's a double-edged question because I'll come with a follow-up shortly. But what's your take on why South Africa's produced so many?
So we joked with one of the professional golfers a little while ago, and he just said, it's in the water. That's how it is. Simple. Just move on. But jokingly enough, we went on a bit further, and he actually came up with a really good analogy. And he said, what happens in other parts of the world? Kids go and compete at junior levels, and they get a prize or a medal for competing. So whether you shot 10 over par or 10 under par, you got a medal and said, well done, you've done particularly well.
Yeah.
What happened in South Africa, what has been happening for a very long time, was that you go out there and you want to beat the next guy next on the tee box next to you. If you come last, you get a pat on the back and say, good luck, keep going. But if you win, you get the praise and the glory that goes with it. And somehow that may be where the difference lies from when we started growing up. You compete at the highest possible level that you have, but you compete to win. You don't compete just to compete. And that's what a couple of our professional golfers have come to the table with and said, well, maybe that's the differentiator, because everybody's trying to put that nail on their head. In addition to that statement, we've got fantastic structures with Golf RSA and the South African Golf Development Board of growing the game in our country. So the structures are there as well to ensure that our amateur golfers can compete at the highest level and try and understand what it means to compete at those level before they turn professional golf into professional golfers. So there's a whole bunch of structures in play before our guys turn pro to make them ready as well. So I think that the combination of what I've just said with the Golf RSA, South African Golf Development Board, and the South African blood in the system that they want to be the best puts us in a good stead every single time.
And it's important the Sunshine Tour is so strong because it provides that competition, that early competition for a lot of the young guys. And they get to mix it with some great players who come back and play the odd tournament in South Africa. So, you know, that's something that, you know, also prepares them for when they go out on a bigger tour, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go back and say that we've had fantastic golfers come through our ranks, all the way from Mr. Player himself, all the way through to our latest champion in Garrick Hugo a couple of weeks ago, winning on the European Tour. So onwards and upwards, and long may those champions come from our country.
Yeah, and I suppose this current generation of youngsters, when I say youngsters, sort of between 20 and 30, those South Africans in making their way on the tours, they've sort of had Ernie Els and Retief Goosen and you know, Trevor Immelman to look up to when they were growing up, depending on where they fit in that spectrum. More lately, Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Swartzel as well, major winners. That's vital too, isn't it, to have role models from your own country to pique the interest of players in your country.
Absolutely. And I was very, very lucky in my previous life at Sale. I managed to look after one of the rugby teams that a big company sponsored. And the easiest thing to do from a campaign point of view to spark interest is if your team is winning. And that's no different in the golf industry. If you have your players competing every week at the highest level, doing well, like we've had over the past sort of 5-6 weeks on the European Tour, where our guys are competing for the trophy, it makes all of our roles a little easier to try attract attention, get more sponsors involved. So when golf's at a high, that means our guys are performing at the highest level as well. So those go hand in hand. So winners create easier opportunities for us administrators.
Thomas, at the highest level, though, to make it as a pro, it's very cutthroat. I think people we see on TV, we see the guys doing well, And you think it's a glamorous life, exotic locations, big paychecks if you're winning or, you know.
Yeah.
But there's another end to the pro golf, and that's, you know, those are guys that are just grinding out a living. You know, how hard is it? Maybe give people a sense of how difficult it is to really make it as a pro.
It's so difficult because, I mean, you've gone through all the phases to get to that particular point. So you obviously can play golf. You've played at your home golf club and you've won and you've achieved. You've then gone on to potentially a Q school and you've gone through that. So again, you've achieved. And then you get onto this stage where you've got all these big sharks swimming around and they are champions in their own right. So you're the small little fish coming to this pond where you have to compete. And I use an analogy quite often. It's going from primary school into high school where you think you're the big man going from primary school into high school and you get into this pond again. and you start swimming against these really big guys, it's so difficult. You've got to get up. You've got to pay every week. You've got to go stay in a hotel. You've got to get to the hotel. You don't have these networks open yet to you. You're brand new. You've got to pay for your caddy. You need the right caddy on your bag, which is absolutely critical to see you through the tough times as well. So it's not just arrive on the PGA Tour. Oh, great, let me go and earn some money. You've done some really hard work to get that particular point. You've gone through various stages of tour schools, competing at different levels. And at those levels, there aren't any cameras, and you're not playing for millions and billions of dollars every single week. You're grinding it out to get somewhere. Jokingly, there's Ernie Els and Nico van Rensburg were in his, I think it's his Datsun, if I can remember the right car. They were driving to the Wild Coast, and Nico was saying they didn't have enough money that week and they wanted to sleep in their car, and something happened that they managed to get a hotel room. I mean, even at that level, when you're starting out at the caliber, and I'm not belittling Nico in any way, that the guys struggle to get going. But once you get going, obviously it's a lot easier. But wowee, it's sure ain't easy to make a name for yourself.
Yeah, and what does the Sunshine Tour do? I mean, look, your job is not to babysit professional golfers, players who want to be. Your job is to provide them with tournaments and a way to make a living. But does the tour sort of help golfers that are struggling? Yeah, you know, maybe. Yeah, set them up with cheaper accommodation, or what does the tour do to assist those struggling pros?
So across many of our events, we go out. We have a pre-planning team that goes out to the venues. We scout the areas and we try go and get accommodation at discounted rates for our professional golfers, and we try get discounts at the resorts where we're staying for our guys. But again, it's the same analogy. If you want to be here, you need to be wise and clever. And sort yourself out, and that means in a negative way. We're not here to look after you. We're saying we're giving you an opportunity, but we absolutely try our best to assist where we can. So a lot of our tournaments provide meals for our professional golfers. It's just a little bit to help them along their way, assist with their caddies as well. So there's an array of things we do, budget depending, obviously. So, but once you reach the level where we're at, we say to the guys, well, you've achieved on some level. Surely you can take the next step as well by yourself.
Yeah. And you were, I mean, the Sunshine Tour was very proactive during hard lockdown. You guys provided a lot of support to players and their caddies with some financial support. I know it wasn't a fortune.
Yeah.
But it certainly helped those players. And I spoke to a few of them, you know, not the stars, but the guys that really struggled to pay their caddies. And they were really appreciative of what you guys did there.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a crazy, crazy difficult time. I think, and I'm not going to stake it in hard, cold facts, but I believe we were the only tour to assist our players. And this really stems back from the board and their financial guidance of what we should be doing around our savings and the revenue we generate and saving it for a rainy day. Mm. And unfortunately, the last 5-6 months was exactly that. This was the rainy day. We're able to assist our professional golfers, the caddies, as well as the Sunshine Ladies professionals with our partners, the Women's Professional Golf Association. And as you said, it's not a lot of money, but it went a long way. And again, it's to our board and our REMCOM and audit committees that ensure that our finances are up to date and we just don't go out and spend all our money we get in the next week for another golf tournament. So we're very lucky to be able to do that.
The Sunshine Tour in South Africa and Southern Africa, at least, is the sort of tip of the pyramid. But I mean, the pyramid below you goes back to club golf. And that's a very strong culture in South Africa, which was on the brink of collapse at one point during lockdown. There was just, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs at golf courses around the country. You know, I know it wasn't really the Sunshine Tour's role, it was more Golf RSA's role to try and get those doors open. But you must have been a pretty concerned onlooker when you saw the golf industry as a whole, which I believe is worth over 40 billion rand to the South African economy, sort of teetering on the brink of collapse at one point during hard lockdown.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear those numbers again. Yeah. So, yeah, Golf RSA and Grant Hepburn, he really and his team need to be given an extra cold drink when they're sitting at a golf club. It was an incredibly difficult time. The PGA of South Africa with Ivana Fikabi and the Golf Club Managers Association formed an alliance, supported documentation, etc. And we were lucky to be part of that alliance and try and ensure that we can get golf back onto the fairways as quick as possible. It was such a difficult time, Craig. I remember it was Selwyn and myself sitting, well, not on the outside, we were in the conversation every single time, but it was so difficult because you were getting golfers that were getting extremely frustrated and saying, you guys aren't doing enough for me. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, there were documentations, there were meetings around meetings of what we can do and positioning ourselves around our protocols and how we're ensuring golf to be safe and getting back onto the fairways and how we can do it and partnerships created within the health ministry and all the new people that we try to befriend and ensure we can understand exactly what our government needs for us to get back on the fairway. So it was an extremely dark time in South African golf. And Grant Hepburn and his team took unfair bullets, if I can call it that. It was a tough time. And they were doing their absolute best with PGA and Golf Club Managers Association. And we were, I say lucky or unlucky, we were part of that champion to get us back on the fairways. And then Grant did fabulous with his team, and so did Ivana to get the guys back onto the fairways. It took a bit longer, but now we go back and say that's a thing of the past, and our golf clubs are recovering. From what I understand around golf courses now, business is booming. They're doing fantastically well. They're never going to recover from the problems they had around the COVID and the lockdown, but they are doing really nicely in terms of getting back to some level where there's a level of normality from a cash flow point of view.
As we come to the end of our conversation, I guess your challenge is finding money, sponsorship, because big business has been hit hard by COVID as well. So I guess that's going to be one issue. And then I suppose another one that's not that easy, but something that would be good for South African golf is to find a real black role model player, some black player who could come through and really become a new Louis Oosthuizen or so. Are those sort of priorities that you've looked at?
Absolutely. So one of my pillars on my strategy is genuinely around transformation. For the last 3 years, we've had what we call the Gary Player Class, where we've identified 24 of the top black professionals on our tour. We've assisted them financially, created opportunities for coaching, information around nutrition, psychological assistance, boot camp, get the guys together, create some spunbo. That's been going, and we've seen some of the fruits of success with Toto Timber winning in Kenya, Keenan Dobiter, and those guys coming through the ranks. With COVID striking us, our partners that came on board with the Gary Player Class, we had to change our structures and what we are doing now. So now we've got a much larger squad. We're assisting the guys financially. We're giving them playing opportunities. So our squad of about 50 guys that we're assisting have got in excess of 90 golf tournament opportunities to make a name for themselves. So transformation is absolutely huge. It's a huge focus. We've created a transformation committee, and Ludwig Manyama, the son of Theo Manyama, who's one of our tournament directors, is heading up our transformation strategy and plans going forward and done some really nice things in the interim to get structures in place so we can move forward and do exactly what you said is find the next heroes. We definitely need to do it, and it's high on my agenda of things to get done in the future.
There's a young golfer, Sim Tiger. Everyone talks about young Sim Tiger. I kind of get the feeling that maybe too much pressure has been put on him, but he does certainly look like a real talent, but he's only 8 years old. So, you know, we probably shouldn't get too carried away by, you know, as good as he is and as remarkable as he is.
Yeah, I love a young man, and he's absolutely a wonderful man. He's so well-mannered. He's positive. He's confident. Really, really hope he can carry on with it. As you say, he's only 8 or 9. But hopefully that will be a fine for the future. But he's only going to be playing golf at the highest level in 10 years' time. And by that time, hopefully we've had 10 champions already.
Hope so. And Thomas, just in closing, the Sunshine Tour, I mean, the summer swing, how many events does it consist of? And what's the sort of goal, the optimum goal of tournament number over the summer swing, which is the more lucrative swing?
So we have about 28 tournaments across our season. And if you work that quickly, 52 weeks in a year. So we kind of playing half the year. We have this little period going into November, December, and then January, February, March is our summer swing. We've done a lot of legwork and hoping to announce the new summer swing going into January during the 3 week of our co-sanctioned events. We'll have about sort of 7, 8, hopefully 9 tournaments that are a little more lucrative, as you've coined it, going into that period. So sort of 12, 14 tournaments in our summer swing is not a bad situation. But again, in my strategy and the way forward, we need to up that a little bit to at least 15 going into the future.
Good luck with that, and good luck with the tour. I think, we do great things. It's been Can you believe, Thomas, 8 years since South Africa's had a major winner? 2012 was Ernie Els's Open. I think he was the last South African major winner. We had that great period, didn't we, with Trevor Immelman and then Louis and then Charles.
Sorry, I'm interrupting. You're very rude, but I heard on the 15th of November we'll have another one, so I'm not too sure what you're worried about.
Well, I hope so, because the Masters, of course, coming up in November. How weird. I mean, this whole year is just upside down. Yeah. And that's going to, I mean, maybe briefly, let's just touch on the Masters. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about it, because we're used to seeing it in spring in America, and the course will play quite differently, I would imagine, in autumn or almost winter. And then will that change sort of the nature of who could possibly win it, in your opinion?
No, I think the course will still be magnificent. I saw some pictures. Where are we now? The 20th, probably about 4 weeks ago, and it was absolutely brown.
Really?
And then I saw a picture a week ago where it was, I wouldn't say immaculately green, it was wow green. So, I mean, the Augusta National Golf Club know exactly what they're doing. I don't anticipate that there will be much different in terms of the playability of the golf course. And then I joke and I say, it doesn't really matter what the golf course is like, because the greens are the telling point around it. And there's that old joke or old folklore with Nicky Price, where he went out and he said, come, I'll go and play you at Augusta. I'll play from the tips. I'll put you on a position on the greens and I'll still beat you. So it's really around the greens, and I don't anticipate with the technology they've got around that part of the world that it'll be any different from previous years.
Well, Thomas Apt, it's been absolutely insightful and interesting to hear about the Sunshine Tour. Good luck going forward for the rest of the summer and into the years to come in your new role as commissioner.
Thank you. Appreciate all your support, and onwards and upwards, as we say, greatness does begin here.
That was Thomas Apt. This podcast is made possible by our Maverick Insiders. Please consider becoming part of our Maverick Insider community, where for a nominal fee every month, you're supporting quality independent journalism. You also get some cool benefits and engagement with our journalists thrown in. Please go to dailymaverick.co.za/insider to sign up and become part of the Maverick Insider community. And also remember to sign up to our Maverick Sports newsletter, which hits your inbox on a Monday, and never miss another podcast by signing up via your favorite platform. I'm Craig Ray. Thanks for listening.